Good morning, it's Paul. I'm trying something a little different. I'm using a couple of external mics clipped to my jacket. A couple reasons. One is because my recorder keeps shutting down due to cold when I'm walking around holding it up in the air. The batteries would shut off. The batteries would lose power because of the cold. And then the thing shuts off. Even though they're new lithium batteries, they don't do well in cold. The voltage drops off considerably. And the device just silently shuts off. So I have the recorder in my pocket where theoretically it's closer to my body, should stay warmer and keep running. But it also means I can't look at it easily to check the time remaining or whether it's still recording or what the levels are or anything like that. So I may not be recording at all. We'll see. Also, maybe this will sound less breathy, less like I'm panting into the mics. They do have little windscreens on them, foam windscreens, but they're probably not as wind noise killing as the like the fuzzy dead cat thing, the fake fur thing that I had on the recorder itself. So I'll have to listen back and see if this works, if I want to go with it. I'm so sick of the thing dying halfway through a monologue. So I'm also trying something new with rechargeable batteries where I won't even wait until they show any signs of getting low. I'll use them for one session and swap them out with another set. So these are brand new Apple rechargeable AA's. They should have lots of power. I think they're really Eneloop. If they don't work, then even for an hour, then this endeavor is pretty hopeless. It can't be the case that only the very expensive lithium AA's will actually make this thing go. Even for an hour. So I dropped the kids off. We were a little late this morning. It's Monday. It's October 28th. We're getting down towards the end of the month and towards Halloween. And tomorrow is the 29th. That's the birthday of two of the kids. Veronica and Joshua have a birthday, 29th. Veronica turns 9, Joshua turns 5. They're very excited. Grace and I are not so excited because we're just barely holding it together as far as keeping the household running. They were supposed to have, Joshua and Sam were supposed to have snacks for school. Grace had to run out at 11 o'clock at night last night while I was trying to keep the baby entertained to get pretzels and bananas. and tortillas, tortilla chips for snacks. And then I carry them in this morning, and we were late. I guess I'm getting used to being late. Kids were just sluggish. They weren't too badly behaved. The weekend was kind of, just a bust in terms of getting anything done. I really had needed to put some work time in, put some hours in to trying to study these documents, study this code, get ahead on a little bit on understanding some code. It's hard to concentrate. I don't know what all's up. Combination of mild sleep deprivation and anxiety over money, other distractions. It's just not going that well. We're not getting on top of anything. And anyway, we end up having a Doctor Who marathon on Saturday while Grace and I try to do some cleaning and cooking. It was rainy all day too. It was really gray. The sun came out just very briefly. And yesterday was similar. Didn't rain all day, but we struggled to get anything done. We didn't make it to Mass. I went out to run an errand to try and find some things I was looking for. Got some LED bulbs and stuff like that to replace bulbs in ceiling fans and light fixtures. I couldn't find this tool that I'm looking for, which is a fiberglass tipped brush, like a little sanding brush. It almost looks like a pencil where you turn it and it extrudes fiberglass fibers. They're very abrasive. It's used for like taking corrosion off of electrical contacts or polishing the edges of like chips in paint, so that the, like scuffing it so that the new paint will adhere. And I'm sure that I had one years ago. I'm sure I got it at a like auto body paint stuff store. Maybe they're banned now because of the fiberglass fibers, I don't know. But you can still, I still see them on Amazon. So I may have to just mail order one. But I've looked several places, no one has the slightest idea what I'm talking about. So, wasted a lot of time running around looking for that. I got into a real reverie yesterday, hearing that Lou Reed had died. Now, I was born in 1967, and the Velvet Underground was going on, doing their famous recordings, the Banana album, and that stuff, like 67, 68, 69, sometime around then. I think they were pretty much done by 72 or so. So I didn't really, I wasn't really that familiar with their early stuff, with Lou Reed's early work, until much later when I heard songs like Walk on the Wild Side. You know, it was on the radio a lot when I was growing up. And in the 90s, I was getting into a lot of older artists, and people were releasing remastered boxed sets. And I had like a boxed set of rarities and outtakes and whatnot of the Velvet Underground. And there's a saying that, I forget who said it, maybe Lou Reed said it, that not very many people bought the first Velvet Underground album, but everyone who did started a band. And that's this sense that you have when listening to that. The sense I got when listening to songs like All Tomorrow's Parties and the Black Angel Death Song, stuff like that, is that anyone can do this. Is that you should just get together with your friends and start a band, you know? This DIY aesthetic before punk that would allow people to just get together this oddball assortment of self-absorbed Greenwich Village, you know, artsy people. There's a kitty. Hi, kitty. No, I don't want to pet you. Who could record these gorgeous songs that were capturing something really interesting about the that art scene. I watched a little documentary yesterday about the Lou Reed's career, American Masters, like I think it was PBS. Anyway, I didn't know him well, didn't know his work well, didn't know him at all. But I came in sometime around 1984, maybe 1985. I would have been in high school. And I had an album called New Sensations on vinyl. And I remember reading about it, that it was basically his another attempt after many, I guess, he did this periodically, at a reinvention, at a comeback type record. And it's an oddball record. It starts out with a song called My Red Joystick, which is really funny. It's kind of double entendre, but the lyrics are smart in that they're literary. And that song's not so great, drags a little bit. But there are some songs on there that I really love. My Friend George, about a guy he was friends with who went berserk and started assaulting people. And New Sensations, the title track, just this laconic, gorgeous, sweet song about pushing forward in life in middle age, you know. And the music was so cool in the sense of jazz cool and minimalist cool. Like, it's not really minimalist. It's not drone or anything, but it's sort of a funk rock that's very laid back. It's very sleek and understated. There's a tune called Fly Into the Sun, which is both about, it's about fearlessness and suicide, the inevitability of death, and also about nuclear war, about refusing to live your life in fear of immolation. And it has a bass line that's this fretless bass that's chorused. And I realized yesterday that when I was listening to that, that that bass sound had imprinted itself on my mind at an impressionable age, and that a lot of the bass sound that I was trying to get on some of my recordings that I was trying to play was an attempt to capture something like that bass sound. But that's the tone I was trying for. That, it's true, that and some Thomas Dolby tracks, Mulu the Rainforest, some has a fretless part, some other songs, some Kate Bush tracks have fretless bass on them. I never really like became that interested in the tracking down the names of the session guys who played on these records, but I'd have to look it up. But that sound, like this kind of upfront and sort of slick and mellow bass tone, sort of anchoring the sound, really inspired me to want to play bass. And fretless bass. But so, I didn't follow Lou Reed very much. I didn't follow him into like the next album after that, I think was called Mistrial. He felt that the critics had given him an unfair treatment, unfair reviews of New Sensations. And so he declared a mistrial and wanted to try again with a new album. He never became big with these records. I think he connected with some fans, with certain listeners, but they never were big charting records the way that I think records like Transformer and stuff like that did. But I think it'd be impossible to overstate how influential some of these sounds were, some of his work, his guitar tone. I was listening to a track, I don't even remember the name, and thinking that, wow, that's the exact same stutter rhythm that David Byrne used in the early days of Talking Heads on the song Psycho Killer. And it was. And Byrne was a contemporary of Lou Reed, along with Debbie Harry and Blondie, and they played at CBGB's. I'd be lying if I said that I was really into this stuff as it happened, you know, and that I really knew a lot about it where I was. From where I was, I would find records in cutout bins at the Big Lots or Odd Lots dollar stores and places at the mall. Is it McCrory's? It's a place at the mall that sold records. And so I'd just take things home for a dollar. You know, cutouts, water damage. Sometimes they're literally water damaged. There had been a fire at a record store. Some of the records got salvaged. They wound up in a dollar store bin. They were all stained. I picked up a lot of records that way. And I was pretty indiscriminate. It just had to look interesting. It didn't have to look good. It didn't have to look like anything that I'd ever heard before. That's how I came across Gang of Four's Yellow album. And Gang of Four blew my mind. I don't know if that's... I don't think that's how I came across Lou Reed's album, New Sensations. I was probably aware of it because I had a subscription to Musician magazine. I don't know. I can't put myself back in my head at 16 in 1984 or so. I was actually really trying to stay plugged in and aware of what was going on in the music scene in places that were very far away from Harbor Creek, Pennsylvania. The other artist that I was really intrigued by and into at the time, I should say, I also was listening to a lot of Rush and I was playing, attempting to learn to play heavy metal songs to play in garage bands in school. I don't even know what all else. Pink Floyd, maybe. Maybe not Pink Floyd, probably later. But the other artist that I was really into, I was into REM. REM was just getting going. That was around the time of Reckoning and Fables of the Reconstruction. Reckoning was a few years old. It's their second album. I forget. Second album was where I came in. My friend Art and I were fans of REM. He introduced me. He was a couple years older, and he was also interested in more music, much more musically broad. He was always into the quirky and much more the alternative indie rock kind of thing before that was cool. He went off to college and was involved in his college radio station, and so he had immediate access to all kinds of records. Morning.
Hi. No show. Hi. Stay off. Hi. So are you getting a little peace and quiet on your walk?
This is what I'm doing, yeah.
Yes.
Good. Thanks. One of our neighbors. Peace and quiet. Is that how I do this? That's part of it. It's my exercise and my chance to talk, to record. Anyway, another musician he got me into was Laurie Anderson. And that was via the her new album, Big Science. And specifically the single from that, the song that people know, which is Oh Superman. Now, maybe it's odd that that I would be, I've gotten interested in these two very different artists around that time, and but it seems now inevitable to me that they would eventually have gotten married, which they did. So Lou Reed married to Laurie Anderson. I've never seen Lou Reed perform, but I've seen Laurie Anderson perform a couple of times. She also was very inspirational to me with this idea of minimalism. I still listen to her, like, monster work, United States 1 through 4. I find that fascinating. I find, especially her earlier stuff. Before she became kind of a pop star in a way. Before it was so much about, like, songs and more about a poem. So that's something that they have in common that probably makes it seem inevitable that they would get together, is not to dismiss her keyboard and violin playing, or to dismiss Lou Reed's guitar playing, but neither one of them is really a musician in the usual sense. Like, they're both more interested, it seems to me, in learning just enough music to go ahead and perform, and not to obsess about the structure, not to obsess about the chords, not to obsess about practicing. Laurie Anderson used to talk about how, and she was classically trained, you know, violin player. She used to talk about how that was her proudest moment, was when she stopped practicing violin. And she didn't mean she stopped playing. She meant that she stopped practicing for the sake of perfectionism, for the sake of being better at it. And she started performing. I'm sure, I don't mean to suggest that she never rehearsed. I'm sure she rehearsed. She rehearses incredibly hard for all her performances, you know, works on arrangements and whatnot. But I think there's a difference. Practicing as in playing exercises, as in trying to perfect the specific violin craft. And there's a story Lou Reed tells about learning guitar, that he went to see a guitar teacher just operating out the back of a music store, and this guy wanted to teach him from the Mel Bay guitar method, you know, learning sheet music and learning chord structure and all this, which is how I started with the Mel Bay books. And so apparently he told the guy, look, I'm not interested in all that. I want to learn how to play this song. And it was a Carl Perkins song, I think. And the teacher said, well, that's just three chords. That's easy. So Reed said, okay, well, teach me those three chords. And he did. And Reed says that was his first and last guitar lesson. He has another statement associated with him, which is, I think it goes, one chord is fine, two chords is pushing it, three chords and you're into jazz. Now, of course, later in his career, if you listen to his playing, it's very tasteful. He knows what he's doing. He doesn't use a lot of chords, and they are mostly simple chords, but it fits the music well, and he can perform on that thing. And he always was very particular with his guitar tone. He got beautiful guitar tone. But again, there's a point to this, which is don't let the music become the obsessive goal. Don't let the perfection keep you from performing. And it's something that I need to remind myself of all the time, because I have that OCD tendency, or I would never be satisfied with what I'm doing. In high school, I would sit and zone out and practice my scales, practice guitar scales, up and down, fast and slow. And because of that, my actual guitar chops are way above what I actually use it for, which is feels wasted. It's not really wasted, but it's a lot of wasted time. It's a lot of time that I could have been playing in a garage band, that I could have been playing with people. But I still haven't found the environment and the occasion to play what I want to play, and the collaborators. And that's something that still makes me frustrated and saddened. I think if I was in a different place, that there would be more people around who might be simpatico with what I want to do. So I tried to do collaborations online and all that, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But now it's the best. Basically, we're here, and we're not going anywhere anytime soon, willingly. And so we have to do the best we can. But so, yeah, there's a whole story about how Andy Warhol funded this band as his house band. They were kind of his pet band. And without that, it never would have gotten off the ground, you know. I don't know if that's true. Reed had a certain drive, but that's a very traditional story in that that's how patronage worked. Shakespeare had a patron. Most artists in that sort of, in these bubbles of what we consider to be culture, historic culture, operated on a patronage system where an artist was supported. It says I'm still recording. 35 minutes on my second lap. So let's see if it'll make it all the way through. I don't think my pocket's keeping this thing very warm. But so that's recording. So I don't see the fact that the Velvet Underground was a patronage was artificial, was an art project. I don't see that as a as a problem. I see it as that that's just an interesting aspect of their founding. But I was very... If you had asked me... So if you hear that Lou Reed has died, do you think you'll be... How will you feel about it? I don't think I would have said... deeply moved, saddened, and mournful for a whole day or more. I don't think I would have said that. I don't think it would have occurred to me that that's how it would hit me. But it really, it hit me fairly hard. Maybe just because so much else is going on and I'm already anxious and whatnot. But I spent a good chunk of yesterday afternoon watching old performance clips and listening to old songs of his on YouTube. And I posted a stream of these clips to my page on Facebook. Yeah, I know. Already do. I was really struck by what a long career he had. And interesting work. And on the one hand, like, you could say, well, he didn't really have a major hit since the early 70s. And that's true, but on the other hand, he still had fans, and the fact that he was relatively irrelevant allowed him to become like a fixture of the art scene, and just do his thing and not care a whole lot about the success of his current project. I'm sure he cared about the success of his current project. But I'm guessing that if you asked him if he wanted to make music that he didn't care about in exchange for becoming a huge superstar again for a few years, he wouldn't have taken that deal. So there was this sense of integrity about what he did. Early on, he did songwriting for a record label that cranked out goofy pop songs, like just that tried to take on any trend that was currently popping in pop music. They would release an album of also-ran, very quickly written, quickly recorded songs to try and take advantage of that style and make a little money on it. And he wrote songs just like bang, 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 you know, as quickly as possible to produce these records. And they were terrible, you know. But it tells you that I think if he had wanted to just produce records for money, that he could have done that. He could have kept doing that. And eventually his terrible songs would have been mediocre. But instead, what he made was highly personal and highly literary. It wasn't even musical, some of it, to quite this, in the same way that a typical pop album is musical. It's all structured around the words. It's all about the words. And they were great words, but very uneven. And he made some bad records and strange choices. Also, some things that seemed awful at the time, but in retrospect were widely admired and copied and influential. Like, I'm thinking about Metal Machine Music. Years and years later, band like the Jesus and Mary Chain and My Bloody Valentine and Sonic Youth really would make some coin on the sort of notion of drone and walls of feedback. And even a more recent band that I listen to occasionally, the song's not that new, but a song called Randy Described Eternity by Built to Spill, a song I really admire. Wall of wailing guitars, wall of noise. I don't think any of that stuff would have quite existed the way it did without Metal Machine Music, without Lou Reed. Anyway, I feel like we live in an impoverished time, that the idea of art is really diminished, that politically we're so short-sighted, that basically so many of us don't live in a way anymore where our basic needs are taken care of, and we don't have this notion that we can be middle class in the sense that we make a living, enough of a living, that in our free time we would be artists, that we would be musicians, that we would make things, that, in other words, have hobbies, do these things where we didn't have to earn our keep at them, that we would have time for culture, time to experience it, to be both an audience member and maybe a creator of it too. That's so lost, it seems. So impoverished. We're all just surviving. We have our heads down now. That's the economy, but it's also, it's just also how angry politics has gotten, and the culture wars, and the war on the NEA and whatnot, and the idea that we're not going to pay for someone's immoral art. It's stupid. Anyway, I'm back home, and I need to go to my desk and try to pick up with my work week. But I just wanted to say that I was really touched by the news of Lou Reed's death, and you might think of him as irrelevant or archaic, but I would hope that you would take some time and go back and listen to some of his amazing catalog of work, and think on what we've lost, and also maybe spare a thought for his wife, Laurie Anderson, also an artist who must be in profound loss right now. All right. I will talk to you all later, and we'll hope that this actually came out in a usable form. pile.